The rise of the machines and the end of the human era has been a theme of science fiction books and movies over the years, including the movie Terminator. That's the theme song we're listening to now.
But our next guest says that those science fiction fears have the potential to become reality as artificial intelligence gets better and better.
James Barrett joins us now. He's a documentary filmmaker. His new book is Our Final Invention, Artificial Intelligence and the End of the Human Era. James, welcome to Central Time.
Thanks. It's great to be here.
Well, what's the current state of the art? What kind of more or less autonomously operating computers are already working on a daily basis?
Well, we've got pretty advanced cognitive architectures like Watson. You know, this year Watson is studying to pass the federal medical licensing exam. Watson is going to be taking on law pretty soon and doing legal research. It's already doing pharmaceutical research. And that's just the beginning. You know, a whole new species was born with Watson, and that's called cognitive machines, thinking machines. And they'll think like we do. They think in parallel, not serially. They're massive parallel processing machines, and it's going to go forward from there. We don't have anything that approaches human level intelligence or general intelligence, but that's on the drawing board for a lot of companies.
And Watson's the one that did so well on Jeopardy, right?
Yeah, Watson defeated the two champions at Jeopardy, and Jeopardy is not a trivial game. It involves, word understanding, puns, a vast store of knowledge. You know, Watson had 200 million pages of information at its disposal, and it showed us what in that narrow game, what AI can do.
And you mentioned computers aren't at human-level intelligence yet, but people talk about the idea of an intelligence explosion, something that, they could quickly get to our level and beyond. How close are we to that?
Well, that's a good question. You know, for my book, Our Final Invention, I talked to a lot of AI researchers, and the mean date for when that'll happen is about 2045. Ray Kurzweil, who's very optimistic about the technological singularity, which you're referring to, thinks about 2029. We have to keep in mind there's a lot of companies that are pouring billions of dollars into creating what's called AGI, Artificial General Intelligence, or human-level intelligence. Those companies include Google, IBM, companies like Vicarious, DeepMind, which was just bought by Google, and agencies like DARPA, like the NSA, countries like China and Israel. For them, human-level intelligence is really job number one. And then once we're near human level intelligence, whether that's 20 years from now or 80 years from now, we have to keep in mind we've created machines already that are better than us at chess, Jeopardy, navigation, search, theorem proving, and more. And probably within the next decade or two, we'll create machines that are better at AI research than we are. At that point, they'll be able to improve their own capabilities very quickly. And these machines will jump from roughly human-level intelligence to vastly superhuman intelligence. And that's the intelligence explosion, when machines become self-aware and self-improving.
Well, you just listed a bunch of ways in which fairly intelligent machines are useful to us. But why something that becomes super intelligent, why would it end up being hazardous to us?
Well, Gary Marcus, who's a psychologist and neuroscientist, wrote a review of Our Final Invention in The New Yorker, and he said, it's not so much when it happens, whether it's whether we create superintelligence in 20 years or in 100 years, it's what happens next. That is, are we prepared for it? Now, we're going to have a really difficult time governing superintelligence because, as a lot of AI theorists propose, it will have drives much like our own, drives like self-protection and resource acquisition. For any goals it has, it will need resources, and then it will come in conflict with us because those are the same resources we'll need.
Well, can't we just program from the outset these artificial intelligences with safeguards, something like you mentioned in the book, Isaac Asimov's Three Rules of Robotics that wouldn't allow them to do us any harm?
Yeah. Well, Asimov created those rules, as I say, I think in Chapter 1, to create tension and fiction. He created them to generate stories. He himself admitted that. They're not very good in the real world. For example, just the definition of life. You and I may agree on when life begins, but a whole lot of people will not agree with us on when life begins. In some parts of the world, what is human doesn't include women or children. Values are values that we would have to program into a machine, change from culture to culture, and they change over time. We wouldn't want to embrace Roman ethics, you know, togas, you know, orgies, slavery, and we wouldn't want people 1,000 years from now to embrace our values necessarily. So we'd have to program into this machine this kind of intuition and value judgment that we ourselves aren't really very good at. So that's really the crux of the issue. When we're creating super intelligent machines, we'll come to a point where they'll have to anticipate what our goals and what our values are, and that's extremely hard to even for theorists to consider.
And you worry that values, goals, morals, ethics wouldn't really be part of the equation at all. A self-aware artificial intelligence would be interested, like a form of life, in survival and maybe propagation of itself.
Well, you know, we steer the future as humans not because we're the strongest or the fastest creature on the planet, but because we're the smartest. You can bet that once machines are smarter than we are, they'll be steering the future. We can't constrain a superintelligence indefinitely, so we'll have to count on them being ethical and moral. And those are concepts that we have. You know, we have very little experience programming into machines. And meanwhile, while some people, and I want to mention MIRI, which is the Machine Intelligence Research Institute, they're working on creating friendly AI now, way before it gets to the stage of human level intelligence. But while some people are worried about friendly AI and programming ethics into a computer, there's a giant rush to create autonomous battlefield robots and autonomous drones. And to be very clear, these are machines that kill humans without humans in the loop. So we've got, you know, a lot of money going into creating really, really violent machines and very, very little money going into creating artificial intelligence that's reliably and predictably safe.
We're talking to James Barrett about his new book, Our Final Invention, Artificial Intelligence and the End of the Human Era.
And you can join the conversation with your questions and your thoughts. Is this something that keeps you up at night, or do you not buy the argument that artificial intelligence could be a threat? Call 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or email talk@wpr.org. We're continuing our conversation about artificial intelligence and its potential threat to humanity with James Barrett, author of Our Final Invention.
And you can join in. Do you think he makes a convincing case that we should worry about potential threats from artificial intelligence? Are you worried based on what you've heard? What would you like to see change as far as how research is done and regulated? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email talk@wpr.org. James, what are you hoping we do with these worries you bring up? Would you like to see us stop researching artificial intelligence?
No, not at all. You know, contrary to my book's title, I really like AI. I really like robotics. And I became sort of deeply involved in the conversation with them because I like them. There are a number of things we can do. There was when scientists were worried about recombinant DNA, they all got together and they stopped research and got together in Asilomar Conference Center in California and came up with basic guidelines like don't track the DNA out on your shoes into the environment. It might contaminate it. Advanced AI needs an Asilomar Conference, needs to get people together to talk about guidelines and set up some rules. Something very encouraging just happened when Google bought an AI startup called DeepMind. The founders of DeepMind insisted that a condition of the sale be that Google set up a board of standards and safety, ethics and safety, for the use of their technology. So they were acknowledging that AI is a dual-use technology capable of great good and great harm, and they were also setting the bar quite high for future acquisitions in AI research.
That's one company, though. There are other companies doing this, governments, presumably. You mentioned, I think, the possible criminal applications of artificial intelligence.
Oh, yeah.
How encouraging is it that this one instance is providing this example?
It's extremely encouraging. To hold up a $400 million sale on this condition of creating a safety and ethics board is really, really important. We have to take that message to the government. You know, the NSA couldn't have done their deep data mining without high level data mining software, and that's AI. So we can see how, you know, the government's got a foot in both camps. They want to weaponize AI. They want to use AI for surveillance. But it's in their interest to make sure that AI is safe from here out.
Let's go to our callers now at 800-642-1234. We've got Joe on the line in Madison. Joe, hi, you're on the air.
Hey, I see, I'd like to hear your guest's perspective on the Internet of Things. I see the concept of embedding a computer chip in everything to allow everything to talk to each other about its, you know, position in relation to other things as another step in the effort to, or in the effort of intelligence, artificial intelligence.
Joe, thanks for the call. The Internet of Things, yeah, among other things, you know, our refrigerator will know when to order milk and maybe have it delivered, I don't know, by a drone somewhere down the road. How does that fit into this?
Well, that's a great question, Joe, and it's a great observation. What it means is that we surrender, I mean, I'm sorry to say it, but it means we surrender more of our privacy and more of our autonomy. Now, your refrigerator might know when you want more milk, but so does the people that manufacture the refrigerator and the people that manufacture the milk. So, and that's what's driving the Internet of Things. You know, we get a lot of convenience and a lot of cool tools with advanced AI and with the Internet of Things, but we also lose more and more of our privacy. There's software that tracks us everywhere we go. There's software that targets us for advertisements. What is our zone of privacy? AI is a hugely powerful tool being used by the manufacturers, not being used by the people to secure their own interests. So the Internet of Things to me sounds like more Big Brother.
Joe, thanks for the call. Another caller who couldn't stay on the line suggested that we program these computers to love all life as an effort to try to save humanity. So put life at the center of our artificial intelligence, I guess, James.
And that's he's put his finger on the issue with programming ethics into a computer. If he loves all life, then it loves Streptococcus bacteria as much as it loves human life. You know, right there, that's an Asimovian paradox where you've got conflicting rules already. And that's the dilemma, to create ethics in a machine that come out positive for humanity and not negative.
We'll go back to our callers now. We've got Dennis on the line in Milwaukee. Dennis, hi. Dennis, are you there? We have no Dennis. How about Joanne in Milwaukee? Let's give her a shot. Joanne, hi. I wonder if the machines have taken over the phone lines. Joanne, are you there?
I was afraid of that.
Yeah, I knew this was going to happen. They're trying to shut down our conversation.
Yeah.
Well,
hello?
Joanne,
hello.
There you are. Hi. What is your question?
Hi. Well, thank you for taking my call. Just a little while ago, I was on my computer and was told that it had to have an upgrade from Windows XP. So I clicked around and got this group that said they were going to do it for me, and I gave them some information, and suddenly they took control of my computer, and their little mouse was wandering around across my screen, and I got to thinking, wait a minute, I've just given over control to my computer. What else will happen if those sort of things happen?
Joanne, thanks for the call. And, you know, it doesn't have to be a human on the other end. There's a lot of automatic updates where software elsewhere on the Internet checks out your computer, says, oh, you're due for the update, and loads it automatically, James.
Well, you know, there's a little item called Terms of Service that you click on and you accept. And Terms of Service is way too weak a tool for us to permit access to all the details of our life. As Joanne just said, she just gave everyone access to her computer, gave an upgrade service and access to her computer. Their ends were probably not nefarious, but there's plenty of malware out there, some of it created by, you know, by our own government and malware experts all over the world that do want the details. They want to go in, they want to take your credit card information, and they want to commit identity theft and fraud. So we have to be very careful with that, with handing over the keys to our computer to anyone.
Thanks for the call. We've got Leah in Green Bay on the line now. Leah, hi.
Hi. Well, to me, you need a multi-multi-SLMR conference on the question of the ethics and the social implications of having a society where everything is artificial intelligence and you have no work for people.
Yeah.
Because that's the direction we're going in. If gradually computers and robots take over the work and they get smarter, what will people do? How will they live? How will they earn a living?
Thanks for the call, Leah. A lot there, the social implications and maybe humans redundant if the machines are doing everything anyway.
Yeah, there's a lot. There's a whole great conversation there. You know, MIT came out with a report recently that said within a couple of decades, I think it was 50% of all jobs can be automated, and a lot of them will. You know, AI and automation are encroaching into our jobs, and we don't have a real clear plan for how to deal with it. One of the reasons I wrote Our Final Invention was just to get the dangerous AI dilemma into the public conversation. And there's already and needs to be a conversation about, you know, are we willing to trade convenience for jobs? Are we willing to trade automation for jobs? It absolutely benefits the people who own the factories, but what about us? What about the rest of us? Is this the future we want?
Are you seeing yourself as a lone voice crying in the wilderness here, or as you research this, did you come across people in the worlds of science, research, security who are having similar worries?
Yes. In fact, I think the AI researchers are the people who are most excited about the book. And these aren't my ideas. These are ideas I got from interviewing people who are working in AI. And they all see this future in which, superintelligence is coming. And the question, as Gary Marcus wrote in the New Yorker, the question is, what happens after? Are we prepared for it? You know, we're doing a lot of really fast product development in AI and automation, but we're not doing a lot of basic research. And so we're getting things, and we'll get things that are extremely intelligent, but not very much like us. And we'll get a lot of machines that are displacing us in our work. So we have to start a conversation now, and we have to set up guidelines, or we'll lose the ability to have any choice.
James, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
That was James Barrett. His new book is Our Final Invention, Artificial Intelligence and the End of the Human Era.